And John, we're moving on to Russia. They're at it again. Russia continued to stoke international tensions by backing its parliament and formally recognizing the Georgian separatist regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia as independent states. Now, the move, not surprisingly, exacerbated tensions with Western world leaders who have already grown increasingly frustrated with Russia's hawkish posturing. Joining us now for more is Edward Lucas. He is the Central and Eastern Europe correspondent for The Economist and the author of The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West. Welcome, Edward.
Nice to be on your show. Good morning.
Now, given the already heightened tensions, what message do you think the Kremlin is sending?
I think the main message the Kremlin is sending is what one might call mind over matter. We don't mind and you don't matter. They feel that the West doesn't have the willpower to resist them and they can really do what they want. They've got $600 billion in the bank in their hard currency reserves and they see that Europe is divided and among itself and that Europe and America are not united and they don't feel any pressure from us that matters. The Russian population is very strongly behind what they're doing, thanks to the strong control of the media inside Russia. And so I think we can regard this only as the overture to an extremely bleak and tragic three-act opera, which is going to play out in the coming years.
Now, there was some talk. What happened to the talk last week after Russia's parliament backed acknowledging the independence of the two breakaways? That Russia, the Kremlin, was going to wait and see how the West was reacting, given the tensions following Russia's move into Georgia, that perhaps they were going to step back a little bit.
Well, I think they looked to see how the West was reacting and decided that we weren't reacting. I mean, we've seen our ally dismembered before our eyes. We've seen Russian troops and their freebooters, their irregular allies, looting, raping, burning, blowing things up all over Georgia. And the West response has been pretty weak, really. We have seen cross statements, but words are not nearly as important as deeds.
What options do they have, that being the West?
I think there's lots of things we can do, and some of them won't work for some time because we should have done them a long time ago. But for a start, we should make it absolutely clear immediately that Russia is no longer welcome at meetings of the G7. That would be the first thing. We should suspend Russia's membership of the Council of Europe, which is a rather meaningless but symbolically important body that meets in Strasbourg, which is the sort of custodian of the continent's human rights legislation. We should say with very clearly that Russia is not going to join the World Trade Organization or the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, which are the two big international clubs to which they don't yet belong.
Well, I don't know, Edward. You know, it's beginning to feel with these two stories, and now the Ukraine is even involved, that, we're spending a bit of, Napoleon's cold winter of 1812 as far as Moscow is concerned. There aren't really a lot of options, and I'm just wondering if with the foreign minister now in Ukraine from Britain, is there any conceivable possibility that the same kind of thing might erupt over the Crimea, the territory in Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think they will get what they want in Ukraine either by using the Crimea to humiliate Ukraine sort of Georgian style, or maybe just through the electoral cycle, because elections are coming up in Ukraine and the pro-Western camp is looking pretty discredited now. We didn't support them when we could have had a chance of making a difference, and so it may well be they get a friendly government in Kiev just voted in the course of events in the next few weeks, and that will also, I fear, is going to happen in Lithuania as well, where the pro-Kremlin party is arriving.
But let's back up before we start thinking about what might happen down the road. At some point, aren't Russia's moves reined in or constrained a bit by the country's need to be a member of the international economic community? You just talked about the $6 billion that they have in the bank.
$600 billion
they have in the bank, but don't they need to continue making money?
Well, they used to be much more dependent on Western capital markets than they are now. I mean, 4 or 5 years ago, it was a really big deal to get a listing in New York or London. And so we had the chance then, which we didn't take, to apply some pressure. But now, if we make life difficult for them in the Western financial system, they can move to elsewhere. And the Russians like to say we have Dubai, Mumbai, and Shanghai. And they are big stock markets. We'll list our stocks and bonds there. And we don't have to worry so much about Frankfurt, London, and New York. So I think as the economic center of gravity shifts south and east, this is very good news for the Russians. I think, actually, you were asking earlier, what can we do? One thing we can do is go after their assets in Western countries, particularly the funny companies and phony trading outfits that are owned by the top people in the Kremlin.
Funny? Why do you call them funny?
Phony.
Oh, phony. I mean,
there's an oil trading company here. I better not mention by name on air because I can be sued in Britain, even for things I say on an American radio station. But there's an oil trading company based in Switzerland, which has managed to become the largest oil trading company in Europe by getting oil cheap from Russia and selling it at world prices. And insofar as we can see who owns it, it goes right back, right to the very top of the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this company is allowed to operate in Switzerland. It uses Western banks. It has Western auditors. It's treated as a respectable company.
So in other words, there's a very, it's almost octopus-like in terms of how Russia has created a stand for itself as it moves forward. Edward Lucas, many thanks to you.
Thank you.
Edward Lucas, Central and Eastern Europe correspondent for The Economist and the author of The New Cold War, Putin's Russia and the Threat to the West.